Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, live from Wimbledon on day 12 of the championships on what has been an absolute celebration of British summertime today in SW19. It has been the most horrific day of weather, except to say that tomorrow is forecast to be even worse. So we've really scouted a top-end wet weather position today because we might be using it for the whole of the weekend. Matt's here, David's here, and we've had to get a guest on today that is comfortable with sitting in drizzle. So we welcome Scotsman Andrew Cotter.
We were born in drizzle. We're 90% drizzle Scottish people, so this is fine. This is actually, I consider this quite pleasant, so
We thank you for your hardiness, because it's been a challenging day at Wimbledon, hasn't it? I mean, thank goodness for roofs. The roof was pulled over centre court long before the players stepped out there today. Hannah got on the chat with us this morning ahead of her Twitter stint and said, I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're going to only have six sets of tennis on centre today. And I thought, oh, Hannah, you party pooper. And unfortunately, Hannah was wrong, because we did only get six sets of tennis today on centre court. It has set up what should be an incredible final between the top two seeds, Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz. But let's be frank, Andrew, those were not the semi-finals we quite hoped for.
No. I mean, there have been quite... Can I say that this year's championships, on the men's side of things in particular, has been short on classics? There have been a few, and I think Andy Murray Tsitsipas over a couple of days was not a classic, but just you want something to provide that drama and go five sets, do we say it as well. It hasn't been that, but I think the first one, I mean, the one I was commentating on was Djokovic doing his thing again, basically. And Sinner was very good in the third set, I thought, but, you know, no break points, converted from six chances. That's you can't do that against Djokovic. So, inevitable, I think, in terms of those two winners coming through. But yes, I didn't think it would be two straight sets. I thought somebody would take a set or two.
Andrew, I don't know if you saw the show with Pam last night, but you can really say whatever you want.
I did see it. Can I say that? What?
Yep, you can say whatever you want and it'll still be less sensational than pretty much everything Pam said last night, so you're fine.
Are we talking about Shriver here?
We're talking about Shriver.
Are we talking Shriver
here? The legend that is Pam Shriver.
You know, it doesn't surprise me. When I started doing strange dog things on the internet, and again, if you don't know about that, that sounds weird. But when I started doing that, the first couple of tweets I put out where I commentated on my dogs and they went super mad, Pam Shriver replied to one with a video of her dog doing something to her cat. And other people weighing in going, Pam! If you can imagine, if you can't see me, I'm putting my hand on my hip, bam, shaking a head emoji. So yes, I can imagine it's quite a good chat.
Yeah, we've seen live scenes of Pam's dog doing things to Pam's cat.
I mean, the cat seemed to be just, you know, suffering it. It's fine. This is just an occupational hazard.
We've had things done to us by Pam's dog.
Oh, Pam's dog. Pam Shriver's dog.
It's going in directions, isn't it?
Well,
look, I was hoping we'd get onto dogs nice and early in the show. Yeah. I just didn't think we'd get there in this on this path necessarily. Matt, do you have anything coherent to say about any of our semi-finals today?
Well, it struck me during the day actually that we had all the right players but in the wrong order. Because I think Yannick Sinner versus Carlos Alcaraz has proved to be a great matchup in the past, and Daniil Medvedev versus Novak Djokovic has proved to be a great matchup in the past. And I think we had a matchup problem in one of those semi-finals today. That was Carlos Alcaraz, Daniil Medvedev. I'm sure we'll get on to that. And the other one, I think we were all hopeful that it would be interesting and exciting because we saw it last year and Yannick Sinner went 2-0. Now, it didn't turn out to be a particularly exciting finish to that match last year, but there was some hope, there was some promise that Yannick Sinner at least knew how to take sets off Novak Djokovic on centre court. But he did the classic thing of saving all his best tennis for the moments that didn't really matter and playing all his worst stuff in the moments that mattered today.
No, it's a shame because there was good theatre in there, because Djokovic is becoming more and more, and playing up to it a little bit, the pantomime villain in there. But I think he likes that. You know, when he's, it's a new one for me. I haven't seen him doing the oh boohoo tears for the crowd, saying, "Oh, are you sad now? Are you?"
Wipe your tears,
wipe those tears away. I don't care. So when he got the, you know, the call of the umpire. I mean, that was so. There were a couple of moments in the match, that hindrance call, and you know, and a, you know, slow play on his side, which that's more justifiable perhaps. But when those two calls came in that one game, I thought, whoa, this match could really spark to life. It didn't, but there was enough to keep the crowd interested, certainly.
Yannick Sinner thinks this match, Djokovic beating him 6-3, 6-4, 7-6, was closer than the match they played here last year where Sinner won the first two sets. I think he's cuckoo. David?
I think that's nonsense. I asked him the question that led to that answer, and all I asked him was, what were you hoping to do today that you were unable to? And he came straight out with that he didn't seem to be feeling that badly about it all, because he feels like he got somewhere and he can take positives from it, which that element didn't surprise me. It's a very Yannick Sinner thing to say, is I'm going to take the positives. But if you think losing in straight sets, and yes, having some opportunities, but failing to take them, is better than going up 2-0 and really worrying Novak Djokovic, then I'm sorry, we've got a different idea as to what doing well is all about.
Yes, that line struck me as the sort of thing that the creators of Breakpoint would come up with. And I feel like it's been a bad day, because that whole, you know, the whole narrative of Breakpoint is, oh, the young players are getting closer to Novak Djokovic.
Bad day for the movement.
Very bad day for the movement. And I just feel like, you know, we've seen this match now a year on from last year, and I agree, it wasn't closer than last year. It was less close. Djokovic was more dominant. It feels like that gap has grown between Yannick Sinner and Novak Djokovic in a year. And of course that should be surprising, because, you know, given their respective ages, Yannick Sinner should be improving all the time, and everyone assumes that Novak Djokovic has to slow down at one point. Of course he will, but it's not coming yet. He isn't slowing down. He's not a worse player than he was last year.
Take Novak Djokovic out of the equation. Impossible and absurd, I know. Did you see a better tennis player in Yannick Sinner than 12 months ago? Has he made improvements to his game? Was it just poor execution from him today? I'm sure we'll talk about his forehand, which was close to catastrophic, I would say.
Look, I don't doubt that he has learnt a lot from Darren Cahill and improved aspects of his game, generally speaking. But I didn't see much evidence of improvement today, and actually I thought he really struggled with his movement. He couldn't cope with those grass courts that had got a little bit of dampness to them. He kept banging his shoes out, trying to get the grass from out of the soles of his shoes. He was off balance a lot of the time, and he was shanking the forehand all over the place.
And that's so mitigating circumstances for him in playing a you know, bad match of tennis, and tennis in particular the forehand, is that if from the very first game he looked unhappy, he was sliding and he was unhappy with his footwork, and it's all, you know, for him, and it's all, his footwork is so good usually, and his strength and his fitness and his lateral movement is so good, that when that is thrown into his head, that doubt, that uncertainty, then of course that's going to... And yes, Djokovic was having the same sort of difficulty, but you could see that it wasn't affecting him mentally in quite the same way. I mean, Sinner was asking the umpire all the time, saying, you know, this is... we're sliding around here. Of course they're going to play on. They're never going to stop that match for that. But he just kept going back to him and saying, look, I'm unhappy with this. So if that's going on in his head, then obviously the rest of his game is going to be affected.
You, David, asked another question in the Yannick Sinner press conference, which I think got to the heart of this match and almost every match we see of Novak Djokovic, is particularly against this younger generation that are trying to push him to one side to create opportunities for themselves, kind of Alcaraz aside, which was, did you play the ball? How do you try and play the ball rather than the man when the man is Novak Djokovic? Because I don't think Djokovic played brilliantly today. I know that's his thing, only playing as well as he needs to, and Yannick Sinner did not require him to play his best tennis, and that is a supreme skill that he has. But had that not been Djokovic, with all the aura that comes with Djokovic, I think we might have seen a different match today. I don't think Sinner would have squandered those six break points that he created. It's not just luck. It's not just bad luck that he played badly today. He didn't just wake up on the wrong side of the bed. He played badly because it was Novak Djokovic. And whether consciously or not, whether he's on their minds or not, he's in their bones. Yeah, isn't he? He's living rent-free in everyone's head.
He's a massive problem for everybody. And I would say Djokovic played brilliantly when he needed to. On the big points, yeah. Absolutely perfectly. He served, apart from a bit in the third set, he served amazingly well. It must be so frustrating to win the first point of a game against the Djokovic serve with an extended rally and then watch three aces go down. And that was all a waste of time. But I personally, you mentioned some of the interaction with the crowd and the sort of trolling of the crowd that he did. I like this Novak Djokovic more than any other Novak Djokovic that I've seen in the last 20 years, because he doesn't care. No. He just doesn't care. He stopped trying so hard. He stopped doing the heart to the crowd and all that kind of thing.
I used to hate that. But not because it was unpleasant. It's just because it was so false. Mm. And I just wonder, you need to have, not that he's a bad guy, but you need to have spiky characters in tennis. And it doesn't have to be this relentless love fest that sometimes we expect in sport between these superhuman tennis players, and aren't they amazing and wonderful, and the fans love them and the players love the fans, and it's just, oh, it's a hallmark card of a sporting event. It's just you see it staged in wrestling, you see it staged in the villains, and he's not a villain, but you need to have somebody who says, do you know what, I'm the best tennis player in the world. Love me or don't love me, I don't care.
Get lost all year. If you want to give me a hard time, fine. I will win, and then I will give it to you back. And too bad if you can't handle it.
And the strange thing is, that is what will make spectators love him more than actually him 100%. Wanting that love and asking for the love. They will say, no, do you know what? We really do admire you, and we're going to give you some love now.
He said on the court after the match, it's great being part of this new generation. I feel like the new generation do not share those feelings.
You know what he said in his interview the other night, where he said, it ain't happening. Oof. And you know, usually it's so, you know, we've got wonderful players coming through and they're getting closer. And I'm just going, that was really alpha dog boss. Mm. It was, as I said, living rent-free in their heads. He is as confident and bullish as I've ever seen. Maybe that's because he knows that actually he doesn't have a huge amount of time back. So for now, while he is still the big dog, he's saying, no, I'm the boss. I love, like you, David, I actually enjoy watching this Djokovic on court and in post-match interviews than the one from 4 years ago.
Mm. He's also never had sort of the top of men's tennis to himself. Mm. You know, he's always shared that with Federer and Nadal, and kind of been in their shadow in some ways, not in terms of on-court achievements, but everything that goes with it. I think a lot of people have always thought as Djokovic as kind of the third one of that group, just partly because he came along later. And now suddenly Federer's retired, Nadal's injured, and is, we know, is retiring soon. And it just feels like he's quite enjoying that in a way. I think he's enjoying just being able to use his aura against all these young players. And it struck me today while I was watching this match, Yannick Sinner is what, 21? Yeah. I think he, you know, the line goes that he was really choosing between tennis and skiing when he was younger, and he didn't properly dedicate himself to tennis until he was 13. It was only 8 years ago. I was thinking, what was Novak Djokovic doing 8 years ago? He was winning Wimbledon. He was winning 3 of the 4 slams in 2015. So he's just got so much more experience than Yannick Sinner, and doesn't appear to have lost anything physically, or if he has, he's able to compensate for it. And what you've got now is just this player with a perfect blend of physical prowess, mental prowess, experience, who's embracing the moment he's in at the top of the sport, is looking at all these youngsters and thinking, well, I can beat them. And it doesn't even really feel like he's having to do anything that isn't within himself to win these matches. It's so efficient, it's so smooth, it's so comfortable, so within him. Might be a different story in the final. That feels like the only guy who might be able to actually push Novak Djokovic from this just total comfort zone that he's in.
Before we come on to talk about Carlos Alcaraz and his route through to that final and a little preview of that final, let's talk on about the hindrance. Have you ever seen that before?
No, I've never commented on a match like that. But also, because I'm not immersed in tennis all the time, I quickly switched the microphones off for Todd and Tim alongside me and said, can you remember seeing that? And I was specifically really talking about Wimbledon. Tim said no. So then you can go a bit harder on it. And it was interesting because Todd was very critical of the umpire in that moment. But when I was commentating on it, the first thing that struck you, and when you're watching it, you just think that noise has come from nowhere, because there's been none of that before. And we see that sometimes players will suddenly step up the noise, but it's when they're trying to be more aggressive in a rally. But it was after the shot. But I think you were saying, made a good point, David, that I think it was almost an exhalation of celebration at the shot itself. There was a little bit of that in it.
Yeah, and that's something that Yannick Sinner, when he was asked about it, referenced. He referenced the Alexander Bublik backhand down the line that he thought he'd hit a winner of and gave an ah! You know, kind of. I remember Agassi doing it 30 years ago, and I used to love that when they really rip one and they know they've absolutely caught it perfectly and it will be a winner, and it's an exclamation.
And it seamlessly moves into the cheers of the crowd and it's carried away. It's just, it's brilliant. But it was. But it immediately. It immediately felt, I don't know, when an umpire does something like that, it's as if they're waiting for something like that to happen. Say, I'm going to stamp my authority on this match, which I don't know. I think umpires by and large are probably a bit like commentators,
or people
you don't want to be noticed. You want to do things nicely and professionally, but if they're talking about you at the end of the match, then it's probably because you've done something wrong.
And I think it was Todd Woodbridge that said in your commentary that he had the feeling that the umpire had been waiting to do that.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, he did say that. Yes, he did say that. And so, exactly. Who knows what the reason for it was? And remember, umpires get nervous a bit as well. And in that split second, you've got to make the decision that it did. I mean, clearly, it did come after the shot, and it didn't impede Yannick Sinner, but it was after the shot. So maybe in that split second decision, the umpire's got to make that decision.
I do think if you hear it as an umpire, and you feel it, you've got to call it.
Exactly, because then if you miss it, people are saying, well, hang on a minute, why didn't you call that? And you're thinking, right. Because they're trying to impress as well. They're trying to get the big matches and thinking about the final. And you think, well, I've got to make this decision just like that. And it's gone. Then you've got to live by it as well. And you've got to double down. And so
I have no issue with the call. I have an issue with the inconsistency of the application of that rule. Because that happens quite a lot and it's never called.
Yeah.
Pretty much never called.
That's exactly where I fall down on it as well, yeah. I quite appreciated the umpire stepping
it
in
was
and
like
causing
gone,
a bit of
guys,
bit
this
of
match
drama.
Is a dud. Let's spice things up a bit for you here.
I can give him a time violation as well if you want. And he did that. Thank you, Richard.
I mean, actually, those two, when you get two in one game as well, because then the crowd are thinking, well, hang on, this guy's got... What's Djokovic done to this guy?
but so rarely does that throw Djokovic off. In fact, it tends to
galvanize him. Oh, absolutely.
Also, if you are an umpire, should you not be calling something like that just because others haven't?
Yeah.
No, well, Djokovic's complaint...
Yeah, two wrongs don't make a right.
Djokovic's complaint to... Is it David Hague?
Richard Hague.
Yeah. Is David Hague someone else?
William Hague?
There is a William Hague.
He was there yesterday, actually. So.
Was he?
Yeah, William Hague was there. Lord Hague of Richmond, I think, as he is now. So.
Oh, crikey. Richard Hague. His argument with Richard Hague seemed to be not... No, that wasn't hindrance, but rather, wow, are you really doing this in a semi-final? Which I see his point, and that is the point we're all making. Like,
a lot of people
don't just do it once in a huge match.
A lot of people say that about time violations on break points, don't they, and things like that. Which I often think, well, yeah, people tend to take more time because it's break point, and if they go over, then yeah, they should get called for it. I think it's fair enough for him to give the rule as he thinks in the moment. I also understand why people are annoyed about it.
I think maybe sometimes it's empathy for the situation, and that maybe at the end of that game, hand over the microphone from the umpire and say, Novak, just watch that. And it's like, you know, when you get in rugby, next one will be a card.
Soft warning.
You know, so it's a soft warning, but there was none of that. It was straight in, DEFCON 5. Mm.
Yes, there was a, like in the Premier League, you know, everyone's always talking about inconsistent refereeing decisions. There was kind of a sort of movement recently to sort of let the game flow a little bit more, and sort of all referees started to do that. And you think, oh, well, okay, we're doing that now, that's fine. I feel like this was just so isolated. There doesn't seem to be a sort of movement to call out more, you know, hindrances, because literally on that court in exactly the same position, it was the same shot. It was a backhand down the line, as Sinner referenced, as David referenced with Bublik. So it just felt so out of place. But if this is the start of umpires doing that, I don't have a problem with it, because I think it was probably the right call.
There was a big one in Serena against Sam Stosur
at the US Open,
which ended up kicking off big time. And also, if you think back to the coaching violation that Patrick Mouratoglou gave, you know, there was a big call for a soft warning post that, wasn't there? And I suppose with these things, you're just going to end up with lots of people with different opinions on it. All of them have got something to them. I think it was reasonable to call it, but I also understand why people say, well, there's no consistency, because loads and loads of people grunt all the time like that and don't get called for it.
Mm. Again, just before we move on to talk about the next semi-final, a last question for you, Andrew, on Jannik Sinner. One of the things that has come up a few times over the course of these shows that we've been doing from Wimbledon is sort of the wider look at Jannik Sinner, because he's been really in the spotlight at this Wimbledon. He was front and centre of that pre-tournament poster. He's had a lot of top billings. He's got this Gucci deal. Mm. You know, he's hyped.
Yeah.
And there must be something. I don't have any negative feelings towards the guy. I think he has a lot of potential, etc., etc. I've made my positions plenty clear enough before. I'm not down on him at all. I just don't quite get the big time hype. But maybe I'm sort of too entrenched in tennis to see something that maybe is cutting through with the wider world. What do you see in Jannik Sinner?
Well, in terms of tennis judgment, there are better people than me to make that. Although I would say that he's actually, for someone, we talk about his great talent at a young age. He'll be 22 next month. But actually, he's come through quite late, so he had nothing really as a junior. He was outside the top 100. He didn't play a Grand Slam as a junior. So he's actually achieving quite a lot quite young. To have been to the quarterfinals of all the slams, now the semi-final at Wimbledon, then actually probably is worthy of a bit of hype. But the other thing is, as well, that probably gets is that he's slightly different in terms of his background or where he's from the Alps, and the Dolomites up there in the Sud Tyrol. I mean, Andreas Seppi was from the same region. But that he looks slightly different. I don't know what might be the particular hook, because he just has a very, very good all-round game. There's nothing particularly dramatic or about his game, and he's not a particularly outgoing personality. So I'm not sure, but obviously other people see
quite
a lot in him. We're desperate, yeah.
There's not many to get your teeth into,
but
is there?
Are we, though? There's Alcaraz.
I think...
And he's getting plenty of bandwidth, isn't he?
Plenty.
Not many others.
Yeah.
But how long now have people been saying, where is the next wave to replace the big three? Because they think that, we think that that should naturally happen, without realising that actually the big three, that's extraordinary, those three. So actually it's going to be players who win 3 or 4 Grand Slams rather than somebody who wins 15, 20, 23, 24. So that's why Sinner is probably going to be a multiple Grand Slam winner. So without... perhaps being particularly, you know, he's never going to be a Nadal or Federer or Djokovic, but I think he is as good as it gets of the Alcaraz apart. He's, those two, Runa, you know, they're going to be carrying things on for a while.
Mm, yeah, I mean, Alcaraz can't win every Grand Slam for the next 15 years, right? There will be the odd one.
Djokovic will still be the last of them.
Djokovic
is 51.
He'll be part of the next generation.
These youngsters aren't getting me, he says.
How many generations do we think Djokovic has spanned?
Well, I remember him being part of Marat Safin's.
Yeah.
I mean, his first Grand Slam match, I think, was against
Australia.
Safin. And I commentated on that in about 2005 or something like that.
Henman played him once, so there we go.
Yeah, and Rysetsky lost to him at a Davis Cup, I remember, in Glasgow. I mean, he really has spanned some, and he's not done yet.
Mm. And in terms of the sort of players that everyone always thought would maybe push those top players out, you know, you've got Hisaurov, Burdick and Tsonga and...
God.
Ferrer.
How long ago does Burdick feel?
He saw off Raonic, Nishikori and Dimitrov. He's seeing off Rublev, Tsitsipas and Medvedev. Yeah. And he's seeing off Sinner and Runa and Alcaraz.
He's very special, Djokovic, but if you look at him when he was 21, so when he won the Australian Open in 2008, you're thinking, this guy's good. But you're not thinking this guy's going to be a world. Mm. And then for the next couple of years, they're thinking, well, there we go. He might win another couple, he might not. And so something then obviously happened, it just was diet or whatever it might be, kicks on and becomes a demigod. So there might be somebody, who knows, Sinner might...
Kick on and become a demigod.
Well, just because if we were doing a podcast back in 2008, people would be going, what is this podcasting you're talking about? But also they'd be saying, Djokovic, you're getting excited about Djokovic. Well, you know, he's good, but he's not.
He's only good because Roger Federer's got mononucleosis, glandular fever.
Yeah,
he wouldn't have beaten
him
otherwise, would he?
Sorderling's the guy you got to watch.
For the next 3 years, we're all saying, see?
Will Novak Djokovic ever play Darwin Blanche? Because that's the next gen behind this one.
Yeah.
15, isn't he? Through to the boys, singles... and doubles semi-finals, which weren't played today because this. I believe the intention is to move a lot of matches indoors tomorrow, including those junior matches, because if you can believe it, the forecast is significantly worse.
Well, I will say, putting my the glasses half full hat on. Do you have a hat for a glass half full? Do you get a hat? It says, I believe in glass half full on the brim. So I think it's going to be drier tomorrow than this. But it's actually the roof of the media centre might blow away. It's about 50 miles an hour tomorrow afternoon. So,
where we're going to go, I do not know.
Right.
We're in big trouble.
We've got 2 shows tomorrow.
Yeah, 2 shows tomorrow. I can't wait.
It's going to be great. Will Djokovic ever play Darwin Blanche? You're our Darwin Blanche guy, Matt.
Yeah.
You think so?
Why not? I mean, Djokovic has got, what, 2 or 3 more years, probably?
Yeah. Blanche will probably make his senior debut at 17, something like that.
I suppose, you know, their paths would have to cross in a draw early on. We're in the draw gods in their hands.
I think it's amazing about Djokovic is, in any sport, yes, he'll have the motivation for still going for more and more Grand Slams to move beyond, you know, Margaret Court and further. So that gives him some of the motivation. But it can't be... Every ex-player in all sports I've ever talked to says, I couldn't do the training anymore. I couldn't motivate myself. I couldn't. So, as well as being physically the best, mentally the best, to have that drive to get up and want to keep on, because as you get older, the diminishing returns in terms of training, he'll be training harder, if not, than he's ever been doing. So that's what I find remarkable about Djokovic.
Well, he spoke about that in, I think it was his pre-tournament press conference, when he was asked, you know, how did he celebrate winning Roland Garros? And he basically said that he doesn't celebrate massively and go outside of his routines because he likes his routines and he likes the lifestyle that he lives.
Yeah.
That's what makes him feel good.
I love healthy eating and I love... It was... I love...
It was totally unrelatable.
Yeah.
Have a pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was basically saying, it's not like I'm denying myself pizza for the sake of success. I don't want a pizza, which...
Well, he hasn't had the pizza that I cook. It's never going to happen either.
I think he's found his Federer moment in terms of contentment. Mm. This is it. This is what he's been waiting for. The chance to be top dog, to be the one everybody's talking about, not in the shadow of anyone. He's beaten them all. He's leaving them all behind. He's going to break every record. And he still feels good. So these are the moments that he's going to make the most of. I think he will decline eventually. He'll decline before he loses his motivation. I think that will cause his motivation to wane.
Yeah, it has to happen sometimes. I mean, it's incredible. It's
not just that he's 36 and doing this. It's that he's 36 doing this, and we so rarely talk about his age or his stamina. He's not walking past me, is he? You just side-eyed me, David, in a worrying way.
He's not there.
We so rarely talk about the potential for him to fade physically in a best-of-five set match. It's just not really a feature of the discussion around
Medvedev from past. Medvedev played well today, I thought. So I thought he was hard done by.
He's gone now. Tell us what you really feel.
He was terrible, wasn't he?
He was bad.
Yeah. We'll get on to that.
David said that.
But I do feel Djokovic... I said last night, surely there's a chance that Jannik Sinner can make this physical.
Jannik Noah, he wasn't in that era.
Tremendous.
Should we talk about Medvedev?
But, he didn't make it physical. And also, that was wrong. Clearly, Djokovic was more balanced, stronger, everything better. Yes, let's talk about Daniil Medvedev.
He was bad today, wasn't he? I thought Alcaraz was great, really, really good. Medvedev was bad, and I can't believe I'm saying this, just genuinely going to check it, he's gone. I thought he played a really dumb match.
Yeah.
How so?
A really dumb match, you say, Catherine.
Well, he kept banging his head against a brick wall, didn't he? I mean, he has a matchup problem, and quite possibly a mental problem against the famous Carlos Alcaraz.
As he
and,
christened it.
Okay, changing it up and doing something radically different might not work because it would be something he's... You're all doing side-eye again, which is really worrying me.
We're just people watching. This is quite...
Right, okay. He doesn't mind what I say about Daniel Medvedev. Okay. It probably wouldn't be successful either if you changed it up and took yourself out of your comfort zone. But what he was doing, his plan A out there, standing back with the line judges, he was being humiliated a bit.
I mean, it looked exactly like their match at Indian Wells, and that was not what I was expecting. I felt like Medvedev would adapt, as we so often talk about. He's so good at doing that. Of course, there's a trade-off. You know, he's standing behind the baseline to return serve so far back because that's where he's most comfortable. That's where he feels he can play his best tennis. So if he steps in, he's probably sacrificing something there. But it just took him so long to try it. I mean, he did it once or twice in that third set, but it was, you know, the damage was done by then. And I so often talk about stubbornness among tennis players. In many ways, I think it's a quality that you need. You know, at its best, it's a belief. You know, you don't abandon your game plan straight away. You know, you need to have some kind of stubbornness and belief. But the bad end of it...
is pigheadedness.
And sort of arrogance and almost delusion. And I think we strayed into that territory today from Medvedev. It was a bit embarrassing, actually, how easily Alcaraz was just making plays. And I think, just a stat on that, Alcaraz served volleys with a drop volley 12 times in the first two sets and won 11 of those points. It was just an easy play for him.
And a lot of the time the volleys weren't that great because they didn't need to be. He had the whole court to play with because Medvedev was out of shot.
Yeah. I thought, from what I saw of it, that Alcaraz played a bit like Djokovic in terms of just opening up the court and playing percentage plays in a spectacular, running incredibly fast, hitting incredibly hard kind of way. But it was the sort of thing that Djokovic does to people, to just open them up. And I mean, they're so far and away the best two players in the world. And
there is a gap, isn't there?
Yeah. Mm. And that's why it's good that they are meeting in the final, because it does feel like there is some jeopardy.
Is this your first tournament commentating on Carlos Alcaraz, Andrew?
Queens. No, I did. Sorry, this is where I get some criticism because I go full Alcaraz and people go, what's going on? This guy's in El Dorado or something like that.
You do you, Andrew.
But I do, but you do you. You be you. No, but I did him, I'm going to call him now. I did him against Sinner last year.
Right.
And then Queens this year.
And how changed and improved do you find him 12 months on?
You can see he's always big, but he's so powerful now as well, and that makes a big, big difference. You know, he's an absolute bull of a young man, and I think on the grass, if it were to go to five sets, I wouldn't have any worries about him against Djokovic. But again, it's just and learning the composure. We all know it's about the having been there and done it now in slams in the past year, that he will have just that little bit more composure on the big points, the confidence that is born of knowing you can do it because you've done it before. So I think this will, fingers crossed. I've said it ahead of a couple of matches this year. Wow, do you know what? This is going to be a classic, and it's not been a classic. So, but I think this final could well be, because it's so clearly, if ever there was an epitome of Djokovic against the younger generation, this is it, because this is the flag bearer for the younger generation. Alcaraz is better than Sinner. He's better than Rune by a distance at the moment. And so if Djokovic wants to say, hey, the young generation's coming after me, it ain't happening, it might on Sunday.
Who thinks it's happening on Sunday?
Happening as in Alcaraz winning?
Mm.
No, I can't predict that.
I'm still having a think.
I don't think it will, but I'd love to see him. I'd love to see Djokovic worried for a moment and see if that just, you know, he's been there before in terms of being stressed in matches and he's been fine, obviously. But
the thing is, we saw that second set in Paris when they played. Alcaraz worried Djokovic. Yeah. It was a fantastic set of tennis. We were so hyped for the rest of it. We know what happened.
You went out for a snack break. You came back.
Came back and it was over.
Alcaraz couldn't walk anymore.
So did I win you over into a TH for the Z there? Did I? I thought I heard you say Alcaraz.
No, did I? It was subliminal.
Was it? No, I'm slowly trying to win everyone over, but it's not happening. So, I'd just like to see Djokovic stressed, and I don't mean I just think and the championship on the men's side of things needs, you know, a cracking final.
I want to see his limits tested. I want to know where those limits are. Age 36, Novak Djokovic, where he is right now. I suspect they're, you know, way up in space, but I want to find that out. Oh dear, David.
Is it?
Not as hardy as your Scottish colleague over here, David.
At the edge of the roof as
I think that if Alcaraz shows up, it's going to be a classic. That's what I think.
He's going to show up, isn't he? It's not going to be Paris again.
I do not think that Djokovic beats him easily if he shows up.
I agree.
And therefore, I will wait to decide who I think is going to win after another 24 hours.
Okay, we have three shows between now and the men's final.
I can change my three times in that period.
If you could make some predictions at some point during those three shows, that would be great.
And there's also a newsletter as well.
I'll wait till match point. Do you know what? I think he's probably got this one.
He's going to show up.
Then we're in for a treat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wary of saying too much because last time I did, I got clipped, and everyone was blaming me for Alcaraz Djokovic being crap after I'd said it wouldn't be.
But it wasn't.
Paris.
But we've been talking about that match happening for 30
months. It
was short,
but it wasn't crap. There were two really good sets there.
There were.
Yeah.
And then he cracked.
The ending was crap, but the first two sets were awesome.
People forget the first two sets too easily in that. And look, something happened to him there, and it might happen again. I don't think it will. I think he will be all right this time. But I do think Djokovic has the type of game that can just make him run in the wrong direction sometimes. You know, as quick as he is, as roadrunner-like as he is, Djokovic has this ability to just change the direction in a way that nobody else can. And Alcaraz can pick it against everybody else. He can't pick it yet against Djokovic, so he ends up relying on his speed to get himself back into position. And I feel like maybe he might be able to read it a bit better, having faced it again. And I don't think he cramps. I just don't see that happening. I think he'll be competitive all the way through this time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Sears and Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Couple of other results to bring you from today before we move on to chat about the women's final tomorrow and dogs. Obviously, I've left a good portion of the show for dogs. We had a win for Storm Hunter and Elise Mertens. I've written here, past me was really on fire, stormed their way into the women's doubles final. Thank you, Matthew, for that laugh. I appreciate that. They beat Zheng and Dolheide 6-1, 6-1 in the semi-final that they played on court number one. Centre and... No.
Oops. Right. For those who are just listening rather than watching, the umbrella has just tried to eat David.
My umbrella is
gentlemen. Oh, no, it's all going wrong.
Hours will be closing in around 15 minutes.
15 minutes?
Please make your way to the exit gates and make sure you take all your belongings with you.
You've got
we
the
hope you've enjoyed your day here at Wimbledon, and we wish you a pleasant and safe journey home. Thank you.
Nailed it.
Also, a lot of people have not enjoyed their day here at Wimbledon today.
Was that 15 minutes it's closing?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be all right.
All right, for the people who've come along and watched and seen very little.
That's for people that spent the day on the hill.
Yeah.
Those hardy folk are now being kicked out unceremoniously.
There was an announcement.
I don't think there's any left.
There was an announcement from the referee's office about the weather about 5:45 as they cancelled all matches on the outside courts, and it says... The outlook does not look good.
Just in general in the world.
And I thought, that's the same for Jannik Sinner and Daniil Medvedev as well. Lots of bad-looking outlooks today.
David, are you okay before
I'm fine.
Press on?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the
just an umbrella injury.
It's just my
Catherine managed that for a
ego.
whole hour all right, the other day.
There's no need to make it worse, is there? I mean, you know.
What was I
I'm
saying?
I'm getting wet.
Hunter and Eliza broken. Mertens will play Shea Su Wei and Barbora Strzitzeva in the women's doubles final. They beat Marie Biskova and Sara Cerebes Tormo today 6-4, 6-1. Shea and Strzitzeva, the 2019 champions, of course, and Strzitzeva's come out back from retirement to play a victory lap this year on tour. So this will be her last Wimbledon, and she's into the finals. That's an incredible story.
And it could be an actual victory lap.
Mm. Yeah, great story. And we have one woman through to the women's wheelchair singles final. That is Jiska Griffin. Still working on that. She beat Yui Kamiji 6-3, 7-5 today. She awaits the winner of Dida de Groot and Aniek van Koot, who at last check was still playing over on court number one. I think that will be the last completed match for today. As I say, lots on the schedule for tomorrow. Lots of matches that were supposed to be played on outside courts today. Andrew says it's going to be dry, but just apocalyptically windy.
Surely it's not as wet as this. It's going to be sunshine and showers, but just incredibly windy tomorrow. So,
and that you can't shut the roof for wind, so they'll.
Oh, well, I don't know. I think they're pushing the boundaries of roof shuttery this year. I think they. Well, there have been a couple of matches where they could easily have started, and then or they could have played. I think they've been quite conservative, quite erring on the side because I think they've been thinking we've got to get things done. So
we're expecting a women's final under the roof tomorrow?
I think so.
I think it will be not because of the wind, but I think it will be because there are quite a few showers coming through tomorrow as well. It's just not relentless like today, apparently.
What do we think is going to happen? David, you do have to give predictions.
Florence Chabert against Marketa Vondrousova.
Yeah, your time has run out.
I think it's on Chabert's time. This is it.
It is, and it'd be a great story, and I think it'd be a deserving winner. And she's such a popular character as well, and I think it would be a very good winner for Wimbledon, for women's tennis. For it's not someone coming from the very same countries all the time and winning. And if we talk about spreading the game and spreading sport and giving women's sport a higher elevation, this is a story that would actually resonate a little bit more. It could only have resonated even more if it was Svitolina in the final, but Onjabur I think would be a wonderful, especially after last year as well. I do like her personality.
You commentated on her final last year, right?
I did. I was, and so that's why I was a bit worried this year, because I saw in that final that she seemed to tighten up a little bit. It was there for her, and but again, hopefully that stands her in good stead, and she looked very, very good in the semi-final. So we try not to have favourites when you're covering an event, and I won't be commentating on it, so I can support a little, but I'd like to see her win it. So.
Sounds like exactly the sort of moment that Marketa Vondrousova might be able to
just nip and say, yeah, well, I don't care, whatever.
She's won their last two.
Their last two this year. I mean, one of those was in Australia, and Onjabur was not
she
fit
wasn't fit
to play.
And Jabert absolutely knew that head-to-head, didn't she? She brought it up in her on-court interview after her victory over Sabalenka. Mm. The question was a generic, you're playing Marketa Vondrousova in the final. She said, yeah, lost to her twice this year. So, and then she brought up revenge because the whole revenge narrative is going very well for Onjabur.
She makes you believe that is a thing in her mind, and she's actually making good on it. There's not many that would reference that particular word. Most would say, oh, I want to win, but it's not about revenge. Well, she's absolutely going there straight away. But I just feel like game-wise, she's the one who can handle the stuff that Vondrousova will throw. The angles, the spins, the flights. And I think that Onjabur has figured out how to harness her own game in the last, well, maybe even in the last couple of weeks. She's really cracked it, I think. Different styles against different players. She can try different ones to combat them. And I just feel like she's just finally figured it out.
She's put the tricks largely away for the last two matches. Those two matches were against big power hitters, though. How much trickery do we expect to see against Vondrousova, who you called a sorcerer in commentary the other day, David?
Well, some of the stuff she was doing was amazing. I think that it'll be mostly reactive. I think the beauty of Honesty Burr's ability is that she can use her hands and her know-how to react to whatever you're doing and make it worse for you. In the past, she's done it in a sort of decorative way. She's just wanted to go out there and show you everything she's got in the toolbox, and whether it's a good idea or not. And we all go, oh, wow, isn't she great to watch? Oh, she doesn't seem to go that far during tournaments. Well, that's not the case anymore. And I think she's right where she needs to be.
Yeah, I think Jabeur. I think we won't, as Andrew said, you know, there was a tightening in that final last year. She feels ready for it now, but I don't think we really know until she gets back in that situation tomorrow. And she's just been very disciplined in the way she's played. And I think she'll respond, as David said, to Vondrosheva's shot making. I think she'll use her own shot making to respond to that. But generally, I'm expecting less than if this match against Vondrosheva had been a year ago. I think, you know, I would have just been sort of expecting drop shots on every rally from the pair of them. I think there'll be plenty, but I think Jabeur will try and play a bit more on her terms, like she's managed to do.
I wonder how many Tunisians there'll be here tomorrow.
There was quite a lot last year, wasn't there?
There were. I would love for there to be a lot.
I think there will be.
Yeah.
I think there will be, yeah. There's a big Tunisian population in London. Of course, it's a case of, you know, getting tickets as well. But, yeah, I hope...
That would be really special. Assuming she wins,
The weather is a factor. I mean, I think last year a lot of people would have come on a grounds pass just to be here.
Yes.
To go on the hill, to watch it, to sing.
Yeah.
It's just not going to be an option tomorrow, I don't think.
Get blown away on the hill tomorrow,
really,
that sounds of things.
It sounds horrendous. It's what's coming tomorrow.
Do join us. Tomorrow is going to be lovely.
Well, we don't know.
Just to say, Vondrosheva has been brilliant under the roof in the last... You know, when the roof came on against Pegula, there was a noticeable improvement in her game. And she was obviously excellent against Svitolina for the vast majority of that match, too. Like... Not that Jabeur was bad under the roof either against Sabalenka, but I don't know, that could be a factor that could help Vondrosheva. I'm still going Jabeur.
Right, okay, let's get on to talk about our Wimbledon mascot, Erin. We have a lot of dog mascots, Andrew. Erin is in fact a cat, lovely cat.
I'm out of here. No, I don't like cats. I love animals, so cats are good.
She's great. We don't think she's particularly hyped about being our mascot, but we're hyped to have you, Erin. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia, David's got Maisie, Matt's got Darwin. They're all dogs.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Did anybody get points today? No.
No, we didn't. We failed to predict straight sets wins for the best players in the world.
We overestimated the quality of the matches that we'd be seeing today.
Only Hannah got it right.
Yeah.
She thought it was six sets and that's it.
Props to Hannah. We have my dog, Billie Jean, Andrew, who's sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss.
Right, yeah.
Normal.
Obviously. As you do.
We have top folks and executive producers. They are humans. They are Jamie, Hannah and Drew. Hello to you. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
Yes, we have Debbie Goldstein, who is in Israel.
Hello, Debbie. I think we might have shouted out Debbie before, maybe.
I think we have.
Yes. Hello again, Debbie.
Now you get an Andrew Cotter shout-out.
Tennis Debbie, Deborah Jevons.
Yes, yes, correct. New chairman of the All England
First
Club.
Ever female chair.
That's very good. Don't know any tennis players.
Don't know if she's a Debbie, though.
Don't want Deborah.
Don't want to be over-familiar with old Deborah.
Oh, I think some of my colleagues at the BBC, when she used to work for Five Live, refer to as Debbie. But officially, we're definitely supposed to say, on air, Deborah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was told Debbie, but know that she is in that position as Deborah. So.
Right. So if Matt ever became sort of chairman of something, you'd become a Matthew.
Yeah.
You'd rebrand.
Yeah.
Much like Matthew behind the camera.
He's so big he's had a rebrand. Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks, Debbie.
Debs.
We've also got Rachel Kirby from East Sussex.
Hello, Rachel.
All right, Rachel.
What's All right, Rachel. Hello, Rachel.
Tennis Rachel's.
Oh, my goodness.
Struggling.
Really Matt struggling. Used to live in East Sussex, didn't you?
No, West Sussex.
West Sussex. Sorry,
we got that. Oh, we hate them in East Sussex.
What was the surname again?
Kirby.
Like Fran
like
Kirby.
Fran Kirby.
Okay.
Who Angelique was in the Royal Box the other day.
Angelique
I
Kirby.
I see what you've done.
I tried to.
We are rubbish tonight.
Rachel.
Rachel Hayhoe Flint didn't play tennis. So.
We're going to have to consult Mary Carrillo again.
Yeah, we will. Rachel, we will do better for you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being a friend of the pod.
And finally, we have David Kalina. From Austin, Texas.
Right, David.
David.
Oh.
Top name.
David Wheaton. Was he? Wheaton was from Texas, was he not?
Yeah.
Wheaton, very good. Used to have a Stars and Stripes bandana.
I think he was one of those players that sort of in the early 90s. He just kept popping up in the last 16 quarterfinals. And
that's right.
I know someone called Austin from Texas. Mm. Austin from Texas.
Mm. What the group? It's tremendous. Name dropper.
Apparently, know Charlene from Texas. According to the internet, the world's sexiest tennis influencer is called Rachel Stallman.
That's what I got when
I googled tennis Rachel.
Well, there we are. Excellent. The world's sexiest tennis influencer.
Obviously, her events are uninfluencing. Is she a member of the tennis family?
I don't know. Rachel, thank you very much. Who was from Austin, Texas?
David.
Sorry, David, how could I ever forget a David? Thank you very much.
Lloyd, Andrew, Felgate. Sorry, I thought we were still doing David.
both good chats. Andrew's fitting in.
What's next for you, Andrew?
What is next for me? I am heading off to the Open Championship, so I think I'm probably done here because of our finals weekend. So.
How many sports do you typically cover in a summer?
Summer's busy because you go from Queens to Wimbledon to the Open to generally an Olympics. There'll be an Olympics or World Athletics Championships or European Athletics. It's World Athletics this year in Budapest next month. So it's just, compartmentalised. Do your research during that event and then move on. So, I've enjoyed it again enormously. It's a tennis commentary on the TV is, of all the sort of commentaries I do, it's the most, you're thinking constantly just about little windows to nip into, because you don't want to talk over the umpire, you don't want to talk too much. That's the thing which especially because I started off in radio commentary many, many years ago, and when you move from radio commentary on rugby or athletics to television, it's a very similar, it's still a full canvas of chat, whereas in tennis it's no, the umpire's a commentator, the crowd's a commentator, the score's there for you, the sound of the ball and the racket is everything, so you just rein it all back in. So that's why switching from sports to sports is sometimes a bit tricky, but after a day of adjustment I'll be there, I'll be fine.
Which is your favourite sport and why is it tennis?
Well, it's difficult to say on this tennis podcast what my favourite sport is, but to commentate on, they're all just very different. So, I just love the challenges of doing them all. But, I grew up in Troon, which is golf country. I did play tennis there in the tennis club in Troon, but talk about windy conditions. See, tomorrow I'd have been fine playing tennis. You start your toss back there somewhere.
You're good in the
drift
windy,
forward with
like Alcaraz.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll be challenging us all tomorrow.
Master of the underarm serve.
And who's going to win the Open?
Tennis predictions, fine. Golf predictions are so much more difficult.
Hang on, tennis predictions are a nightmare.
No. So in the last 20 years, they've been a lot easier. But if you were to predict in golf, you'd say 50, 60 players could win every week now because equipment has levelled things so much. The players can't separate. That's why what Tiger Woods did was just incredible. To win 15 is extraordinary.
I didn't realise that at the time. I used to see him and Federer going toe-to-toe
in numbers. Doing the same
kind
of thing,
I didn't realise.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What Tiger Woods was doing was probably more outlandish.
Well, you're beating 150 players as opposed to beating, yes, you are beating the field in tennis, but directly, you know, you're winning seven matches. So it's just, it's, and I think because it's a one-on-one sport in tennis, you can, if you're better, you can dominate your opponent a bit. Whereas the variables, and you can't control what's happening quite so much in golf. You might get an unlucky draw morning and afternoon, the weather just changes totally. So Yeah. Tiger Woods is extraordinary. So I move on to golf chat at the end of the tennis podcast. But so I didn't answer your question about which one I prefer. I like them all equally.
Very diplomatic.
Like all my children, I love them. The thing is, I don't have any children.
Which
so
one
I can
of your dogs
that,
do you
so.
Like most?
Oh, they're both just special, and I wish they were here with me. So,
Well, that brings me to my very final question: how can we join forces, Andrew, to get more dogs in tennis?
Well, I've done my bit this year with the search dogs, the explosive search dogs. So I think that was why there were two of them at the top of the program with Claire Balding, and today she got Flo and Bentley on with her. But she does crufts, Claire, as well, doesn't she? So she was delighted to have that. So yeah, more dogs in tennis. So when you talk about the AI coming in, and in terms of, yeah, we might be automatically calling the lines as well, so the line judges go, ball boys and ball girls and ball gatherers, they're the next to go. Get dogs in, well-trained dogs, and they can just sit in the lines, and they would just, they would be beautiful at fetching those balls, although occasionally they'd run onto the court and the umpire would shout, hindrance! As a spaniel.
So we'll all be replaced by AI and there'll just be dogs running around everywhere.
That sounds like a happy future to me.
Yeah, that sounds like utter utopia. Andrew, thanks very much for joining us on the Tennis Podcast. David and Matt, thank you as well. But
cheers.
You're a given. Thank you. Thank you all for watching. Thank you to all of our shout-out friends, our intro friends, friends of the Tennis Podcast that keep this show on the road year-round. Subscribe to the newsletter if you haven't already. It is free and it's excellent. Teaser for the stat today.
Haven't done the stat yet, but King of the 90s
is going to be
good.
Great.
Rachel McCluskey used to play tennis in Trun Tennis Club.
Well done.
Does that count?
Mic drop.
We're going to take it.
Mic drop ending to day 12, live from Wimbledon. Make sure you join us tomorrow, not only for the podcast and the live show after the end of play, but also for our live show previewing the women's final. We'll be here, hopefully we'll be in the dry weather position, but we might very well be here at midday tomorrow, Saturday afternoon, previewing the women's final. So do join us then. And of course, after play tomorrow as well. Thank you for joining us. We'll speak to you tomorrow.